Thank you. And I apologize if I didn't buy any of your books or records that you may have brought in. And congratulations to Jessica and Laura for 20 years of Stoop. I have a especially fond feeling for Stoop because my first date with my now wife, Everly, was at a Stoop. And I was all excited, you know, to introduce Everly to Jessica because, you know, Jessica and Aaron would always say, well, that Rupert, he's not too bad of a guy, but he's never going to find love. There's no way. And so I went to introduce Jessica to Everly, and right when I'd say, and here is Everly, Everly had turned her back on us and was leaning over a table so that her butt was kind of very prominent. And Jessica said, well, I like what I'm seeing so far. So never forget that. So there have been thousands of great bookstores and interesting bookstores throughout history, some of them very remarkable, like Shakespeare and Company in Paris, where James Joyce, Gertrude Stein, and Hemingway used to hang out. They published James Joyce's Ulysses for the first time, and created a big scandal, and almost went out of business from it. And a really cool story that happened there at the end of World War II, Hemingway returned to visit Sylvia Beach, and there were some stray Nazis terrorizing the neighborhood, and Hemingway climbed to the top of the roof and took them out. So, and that is a true story. And then we got like City Lights, co-founded by legendary poet Lawrence Ferling Getty, home of the West Coast Beats, meeting place for so many political activities and groups. And in their first year, they had a deal where if you bought $10 or more, Allen Ginsberg would run naked down the aisle carrying your purchase. So that was pretty cool. Got to get in my naked Ginsberg jokes. And then in Baltimore, there's legendary Sherman's Books. Yeah, with Abe Sherman, carried like Black Panther stuff, all the early Grove Press when it was hard to find, magazines from all over the world, and you weren't considered a true regular customer until he'd bounced you out on your ear a few different times. But Normal's Books and Records was a bookstore that was partially birthed out of a schizophrenic test study, and that we had our very own Wilhelm Reich orgone box built to spec, and we housed a very occult, legendary male artist prankster named Blaster Al Ackerman, who looked like Philip K. Dick, and whose words were used in the top 10 hit Hamburger Lady, made by the teen heartthrob group Throbbing Gristle. And Blaster always kind of lived in fear that Genesis was going to pop in and say hi. He loved him from a distance, but was a little scared. But yeah, Normals was founded. We opened June 1st, 1990. So we're coming up on 36 years old. And I had hair when we opened. I have photos. Glenn Burney Fro kind of grew upwards. It was a collective of 9 people, which seems, you know, a little large. But we were all very good friends. We were all artists and writers of some sort. And Baltimore has always been such a collective space. And so we all, you know, we played bands together. Some of us lived together. There was a rather almost grotesque mix and match of lovers going on. Because, you know, it was the 80s, early 90s. And some of us had worked for Second Story Books for a while, which is, you know, really fun job. until you got older and you wanted to make sure you had health insurance and that your checks would cash. And so we said, hey, let's open up a bookstore ourselves. And it's wild because another thing was many of us had worked and lived for a while around D.C., and not to diss D.C., but I just feel like we couldn't have done what we did except in Baltimore. It's like we literally pitched in like $150 each. We each had to contribute some of our own book collection, and we just constantly were thrifting and hitting yard sales at first. And we checked out many different neighborhoods, but our friends Terry and Dee Dee had a little vintage clothing shop called Las Locas on 31st Street, and they were really great people. And sadly, they went out of business, but when they did, we said, hey, you know, let's give it a shot. It was a very small space. There's like a hair salon there now. But we figured with the farmer's market, and at that time, there was Sam's Belly Food Co-op, like one of the first food co-ops of the city. There was the 31st Street Women's Bookstore. Around the corner, there was a free people's health clinic, which is so hard to imagine now. And so we said, oh, this will be great. And we were all definitely, believe me, left of the dial. We were all anarchists, anarcho-communists, neoists, don't-knowists, Trotskyists, but definitely, you know, not too mainstream and definitely not to the right. But Waverly at that time was so very progressive and in a certain way that a lot of the people there were actually suspicious of us, like, wait, you want to make money? You're business people? You know, they really treated us like we were Kmart or something, you know. Which shocked us, you know. It's like, you know, wow, bookstores, you know, information, knowledge, you know. I always assumed that went along with the left and things, you know. God knows the right, especially now, don't seem too interested in books or science or knowledge or education. But it was true. It was pretty wild. In fact, right across from us was the Communist Party USA.
CIA.
No, sorry. And one time, our landlord, who was a very cool guy, but, you know, they weren't using it. It was really good space across the street from our little original spot. And so he said, hey, you know, if they're not going to use it, would you guys want to take over there? And we're like, we don't want to step on any toes. But if they don't want that big space where no one's ever doing anything, we would love that. So then that night, on our message machine was a message left. Hey, you hip little capitalists, if you try to take over our space, we're going to burn you all down to the ground. You know, it's like, hey, thanks for reaching out, neighbor. You know, could have walked across the street and had a talk about it, for God's sake. But so a big part of when we did it, too, not only to be, you know, blood-sucking capitalist, you know, selling those used books, $4 to $6, woo! You know, rolling up on our bikes. And speaking of duct tape, most of us had duct tape shoes and stuff. But we wanted it to be a sanctuary, you know, because part of the, you know, the way we picked Normals as a name was because literally about 4 of the 9 of us were part of a schizophrenic test study at Shepherd Pratt, and if you were found to not be schizophrenic, you were a normal. So I personally did not take part in that test. I was a little nervous what I would find out at that time, but I think I just drank too much, basically. But so it was partially that, and it was partially because, you know, it was a statement about normal. Like, you know, there is no such thing as normal. It's, you know, this on the spectrum thing. And all of us, you know, have been freaks of one kind or another all our lives. My mom had once tearfully looked at me in the kitchen and said, you're never going to make it in life. You know, it's like, all right. Chariots of Fire. I can hear the song. You know, so this was our little project, and we felt it organically fit into our, you know, our interests. We, you know, we're all, like I said, writers and musicians. We wanted to have shows. At the time, I had a long-running literary magazine called Shattered Whig Review. Ooh, thank you. Oh, wow. All right. So I published a lot of the people who shopped at the store and, of course, the co-workers. And then in about our fourth or fifth year, the Red Room started up, which was mainly started by John Burnt, who's still one of the co-owners. We're down to three co-owners, but John is one of them. But he started this experimental improv series. And at that time, it's so wild because in the 80s and early 90s, yeah, experimental music was really, you might have five people show up to it or something, and it was, you know, it was not a lot of people into it. And now I feel like it's almost mainstream in a weird way. Like, not the music isn't mainstream, but it's like every show they have is like packed, and it's spreading to other venues and everything. You know, not all just because of the Red Room. I think it's sort of a global phenomenon, but it's been really interesting to watch. And so, a lot of you, and we weathered through, 35 years. We weathered through a lot, and like I said, it has been a sanctuary. It's a great place to be. One of the reasons I love it is like to be there, like now when we're in an authoritarian regime, just to be there and talk to people who I feel like, you know, I like your priorities. You know, love, books, music, education. And, you know, and not everybody's, like, completely on board with the same, you know, the way they want things to go or, you know, the solutions. But it's just wonderful to talk to people who love culture and appreciate it. You know, like, we were a day that really sticks out in my mind. And one of Baltimore's best sound people, Natasha, was one of the people who came through, was on 9/11, you know. I was working with Blaster, and I was like, we were looking at each other like, what do? Do we open up? This is just, everything felt so strange. And Blaster said, yeah, you know, I think we should open up. People are going to want to walk around and talk to other people. And we actually, it was one of the few times we didn't play any music for the first few hours. And I forget if Natasha recommended it or we were playing it when she came in, but Eric Satie was the first thing we put on. And it was like, okay, this this was ease us back into the audio world. But now I know a lot of you, the main thing on your mind is, whatever happened to that orgone box? Well, it was used creatively by, this was when we were in, briefly we had the books across the street in a basement, and we had our record still on the original spot. And one night, somebody hid in the orgone box, and then when we closed up, they stole the, like, you know, probably $3 worth of coins we had in the drawer, and then broke out instead of breaking in. Oh, very, very imaginative of them. And then a week or two after that, literally the pipes burst in the wall behind the orgone box, and just all sorts of satanic things flooded out all over it. So we all became Scientologists. Thank you, and good night.